Go ahead.
I'm going to call the meeting to order. Thanks everyone for attending. I'm going to respectfully acknowledge the Qualicum First Nation on whose traditional territory this meeting takes place. With respect to welcome and introductions, I'd like to say thanks to Stuart McLean, our Area H Director, for showing up. I'd like to introduce the board to you. For those of you that haven't been before and don't know, starting on my far right is Elisa Woodward. Next to her is Lisa Charcot, Craig Kirstens. We have Adam Norman, our water operator, John Marsh, myself, Colin Thompson, Crystal Kuhn, Diane Cole, Janine Sibley, and our auditor, Corey Vanderhurst. Sorry, Corey, I lost it for a second. I would suggest then our first approval of the agenda is our first order of business. The recommendation before us is that the board approve the 2025 Deep Bay Improvement District Annual General Meeting agenda. Could I have someone move that motion? Diane, thank you. Is there any discussion on that motion?
Who was the seconder? Sorry.
The seconder? Crystal, thank you. Any discussion? Seeing no hands, we'll call for the question. All those in favor of the motion that the board approve the 2025 Deep Bay Improvement District Annual General Meeting agenda, please indicate by raising your hands. Thank you very much. Carried and so ordered. Ladies and gentlemen, can you hear me all right? I'm not going to use the mic if I thank you very much. We'll move on to item number four, 2024 AGM minutes. The recommendation before us is that the board receive the 2024 Deep Bay Improvement District Annual General Meeting minutes. These minutes were approved at the June 17th, 2025 board meeting. Could I have someone please move that motion? Thank you, Trustee Kirstens. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Trustee Woodward. Any discussion?
Just if I
Administrator,
could,
please.
Mr. Chair, the minutes, it's from 2024. They've already been approved by the board. You might ask, why are they on here? It's just for everyone's convenience to be able to see what we did at last year's annual general meeting. And that's why the motion is to receive it rather than approve, because they've already been approved.
Thank you, John. So seeing no hands for discussion, we'll call for the question on the motion that the board receive the 2024 Deep Bay Improvement District Annual General Meeting minutes. All those in favor, please raise your hands. Carried, so ordered unanimously. Corey, we're going to move on to the financial statements and auditor's report for 2025. I would defer to you, sir.
That's good. Thank you. Thank you to the board and residents for inviting me here to attend your AGM tonight. I'll take you through some highlights of your financial results for 2025. Before I start, a big thank you to John and Janine for going through the audit process with us. We really appreciate all their help. On page 10 in your packages, you have our independent audit report. The board made the financial statements on the 21st. We reviewed that to accept and getting some pages, but these are the final numbers, and we will have a final publication tomorrow. Then I'm going to, page 10 is a clean audit opinion. You're satisfied that the financial statements fair and accurately in all material respects in accordance with the appropriate standards of government. In the numbers, I'm going to start on page 13 in your packages. This is the statement of operations, looking at, the income statement of the revenues and expenses for 2025. You can see there, you get your budget column on the left, the actuals in the middle, and the prior year 2024 on the right. Overall revenues, parcel taxes, water services, investment income, things like that, were $1,140,000, up over $100,000 a year, and above the budget estimated amount. On the expense side of things, we break it out into water and fire, and then in the back, there's a schedule that gives you more detail there. But overall water expenses were $508,000, up about $50,000 from the prior year. And fire protection expenses were $238,000, about $15,000. But now both those numbers look like they're higher than budget, but in each of those numbers, the 508 and the 238 is an amortization charge, an accounting entry to depreciate the assets, but that's not in your budget because it's not cash based. It's just an account. That's why they look like they're over budget, but they're actually not. So total expenses for the year were $746,000. You have an accounting surplus of $394,295 for the year, a little bit from the prior. Now I say accounting surplus because that has accountants' adjustments in it. It also doesn't have any of the capital spending. There's a little bit over $150,000 in capital spending throughout the year on the water system equipment. You flip back to page 12, the statement of financial condition. You get a snapshot of what was in the district's accounts at the end of December 31st. You can see there your cash balance fairly consistent year over year at $335,000. Your investment balances have increased $300,000, $2,457,000, and there's always a little bit of receivables in there. So $2,897,000 cash investments and receivables. On the liability side, there's a little bit of payables every year at the end of December, $60,000 away. The debt for the firewall being paid down on schedule is currently at $1,392,000. And we do have a small asset retirement obligation liability recorded there for the older part of the building and asbestos of being the wall of $60,000. Your net financial assets minus the liabilities that we spent through, is $1,380,000. So a positive helping position there. Then we get what we call the non-financial assets, the water system, fire hall and buildings, trucks and equipment. That balance is $4,678,000. So as I mentioned, there's about $150,000 in spending of the year, but then depreciation reduces that balance down. At the end of the year, the district has an accumulated surplus of $6,091,000, and that's broken up into three areas. One is what we call the equity in the capital assets. That's $3.2 million. That's the value of the book value of the assets minus the debt of the fire loan. And that's not a cash balance of $3.2 million. Then there's $2.2 million set aside in reserves for future projects, and the general fund, operating funds, both the water and air, have a $654,000 surplus. That's a really quick run through. The rest of the statements have detail on some of the balances, and they get into some of the background. Right. I'll pause there. I'm happy to answer any questions about the financial statements.
Well, it's happening anyways. He's asking questions now.
Corey, since there's no questions yet from the audience, I'll ask you a question. On the budget, as you said, we're not budgeting for the non-cash items like amortization, that depreciation that traditionally wasn't even recorded by municipalities or improvement districts. From your standpoint, do you think we should start doing that? Because there would be a way of doing that, and then it would match up better with the financial statements.
Yeah, and what I've seen is some people will build their budget on a regular basis, and then down below we'll have an amortization estimate and then an offset so that you still get to balanced.
Yes.
And then when we put the statements together, then you have that estimate and it looks a little bit more apples to apples. But yeah, I would suggest that because I mean, you can project what we think 2026 amortization will be
Oh, yeah.
pretty
Yeah.
easily. Yeah.
I agree. Consider it done. Thank you.
Any other questions from the floor or the table?
It's still going on, I think.
Carry on, sir.
Okay, that's everything. I'll turn it back to
Well, thank you very much.
Since there weren't questions, I'll make a comment if I could. And Corey may want to comment on it as well. On page 12 of the agenda package, on the statement of financial position, it shows that our financial assets are increasing, and it's by about 300,000. So that's cash and investment. And you'll likely see that for the next few years because we're in a period where we're collecting cash and for expenditures that are going to come down the road, like to replace AC pipe that is coming due. I'll be talking about that in another part of this evening's report, but I just wanted to highlight that that that's the reason that there's excess cash there. The board has been increasing parcel taxes, partly because we have some huge expenditures that I'll talk about that are coming down the road, and we need some money in the bank to be able to pay for those expenditures that are coming up. So thank you.
Thank you, John. Further questions at all?
I just make a comment.
Please.
Thank you, Corey. Thank you for our financial team, our administrators. You guys did a great job this past year. Thanks for your help.
Thank you, Diane. Then the recommendation before us, trustees, is that the board receive the 2025 Deep Bay Improvement District financial statements and auditor's report that were approved at the April 21st, 2026 board meeting. Could I have someone move that motion? Thank you, Lisa. And a seconder? Diane, thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing no hands, we'll call for the question. All those in favor of the motion, please raise your hands. That's carried and so ordered unanimously. Thank you very much, Corey.
Yeah, thank you, Corey.
Moving on to item number six, the annual general meeting report for 2025. Before John has his turn to speak, I'm going to deliver a message from the chair, which begins with thanking everybody for attending. Another year has passed, and as we age, it seems the time passes by more quickly. I would like to thank every board member for their service, their support, and their commitment to working together on behalf of all the residents living within DBID. There have been challenges that the board has had to work through, many relating to prioritizing the Thompson Clark West Water Main Replacement Project and the Reservoir Replacement Project, and then with staffing issues relating to retaining a permanent administrator. These issues have fortunately now been resolved. Our board has completed and continues to make progress on a number of projects. The Thompson Clark West Water Main Replacement Project has been completed, came in on budget, and the final costs are published on our website. The reservoir has been inspected, assessed, and repaired. These repairs may extend the life of our reservoir for the next 10 to 15 years. Water sampling by our water operator, Adam Norman, here tonight, is taking place weekly, and the results are sent to VHA. These results are posted on the website. The reservoir replacement has been budgeted for 2039 based on the Harold Engineering Water Tank Assessment of 2024. Number three, a second emergency backup generator is in process of being purchased for well six. Next, we have an aging pressure reducing valves are scheduled for replacement in our bunkers on Gainsburg Road. A sprinkler protection unit trailer has been purchased for the fire department, and we will be scheduling our fire hydrants for inspections and servicing. We have dealt with the staffing issues related to retaining a permanent administrator. The current administrator was hired in March of 2025. At this time, due to our past administrative upheaval, there were several significant outstanding administrative tasks. These works are now being carried out and completed in a timely manner. The financial audit for 2025 was completed on schedule by our auditor MNP. Capital and operating budgets for 2025 for the water and fire department operations were approved on schedule by the board. I would be remiss if not to thank the administrative staff. They don't ever ask for any thanks, but I need to say a big thanks to Janine for stepping in as acting administrator and doing a great job. Thanks to Nina LeBlanc for providing assistance during the absence of an administrator. And thanks to my partner next to me, John Marsh, for coming back as our administrator and helping us get back on track and providing effective leadership. As I say, these people do not ask for any accolades. They are hired full-time. They do a wonderful job. Without them, we would be lost. So it is prudent to acknowledge their worth. And to Margaret Fernell, who is with the fire department. Having attended fire protection committee meetings with her as our chair of the fire protection committee, we are all most grateful for her attention to detail and her organizational skills in administering the business of the fire department. Thank you to the Deep Bay Fire Rescue Society. The society has now donated approximately $265,000 to the DBID for fire department budget items. That is fantastic. Thank you to George Lenz, the chief of our fire department. Thank you to all his members. Without them, we'd be lost. The volunteer fire department is irreplaceable. They do wonderful work in the community. They volunteer their time, and they are a huge, huge asset to this community. So thank you. I see a few fire department members here tonight. I see the chief. Thank you very much for your service, all of you. Looking ahead, the board priority has begun to work on establishing a strategic plan. This plan will outline the board's goals and specific actions and resources required to achieve them. In closing, and on behalf of the board, I want to thank you, the ratepayers, for electing us as trustees to serve the Deep Bay community. And I encourage you, one and all, to stay up to date with the ongoing business for our district. And I ask everyone here, you have neighbors, talk to your neighbors, ask them to come out to the board meeting once in a while. The more input we have from our residents, the better we can be as a group. Thank you very much. I'll now turn it over to John Marsh for the administrator's report.
Thank you. I'll quickly go through the AGM document with you, starting on page 31. It lists the trustees in terms of when they were elected and their terms expiring. There are three positions that are coming up for election this year: Craig Kirsten's, Crystal Kuhn, and Suzanne Leroy's position. Suzanne Leroy has resigned. She's moved out of the community, and we got her resignation a few days ago. So we certainly thank her for her great service. I was looking forward to working with Suzanne on the emergency plan report. She has a lot of expertise in that area, but she's not here, so we'll have to limp through it and figure it out. In addition to regular board meetings, we have a number of committees: bylaws, facilities, finance, fire, operations, and planning committee. In terms of administration, that's mainly Janine and I. Nina was here and provided great help when we were short of staff, like when I wasn't here. But so she did great work too, but it's just Janine and I, and we look after all the paperwork, the financial matters, and just basically the administration of the district. It's definitely getting more difficult for administration, which then goes to more difficulty for the board. Things are getting a lot more technical and legal. Things change. Like now we're dealing with, for instance, just a couple examples. Privacy issues take a lot of time now. Have to be very careful regarding privacy matters. We have to deal with archaeological areas now that we didn't deal with, and there's a lot of paperwork associated with that. WorkSafe BC on our confined space issues. There's just a number of legislative areas that are making it very tricky to or more difficult to run an office. Moving ahead on the report, it describes the water tolls. Actually, the item that I would like to speak to, that I was alluding to on building up reserves when the auditor was here, is at the bottom of page 34. And the bottom of page 34 shows $31 million in expenditures over the next 25 years. Just over $4 million of that is for things like the reservoir replacement and miscellaneous items. The big ticket item, $27 million, is our water lines, asbestos cement water lines. We're projecting that they will all have to be replaced within the next 25 years. What will likely happen is some will extend longer than that. But for the purpose of the analysis, we're We're aging it out at an 80-year life for our AC pipe. When our pipe was first put in, our engineering estimates were that the pipe would last 60 years. And most of the pipe was built in 72. So that would mean that we would be doing all of this in the next 5 years. That isn't realistic. We changed the useful life, the estimated useful life of the AC pipe from 60 years to 80 years. And based on an 80-year life of the pipe, the projected cost at a 3% inflation factor was $27 million. And that's how you get up to that $31 million. So we're projecting in 25 years, we're going to need that amount of money to replace our pipe. Until a couple of years ago, we were not saving for our pipe replacement. I know Trustee Koch was talking about this when I first got here and even before, about that this day was coming when we needed to deal with the pipe replacement. And that's why we started with a fairly large increase to the water parcel tax this year, which was 11%. Anyone who comes into the office and asks about this, I explain it to them how I've just done this. You know, people come in, you know, not real happy about it, but at least they leave understanding why, and mostly supportive. We do get a little bit of feedback that where people will say something like, well, I'm not going to be around in 25 years. And that is an issue. It's an intergenerational issue. And all local governments are faced with this. And that's why you're seeing massive tax increase. Well, a big reason you're seeing massive tax increases in local governments everywhere, with the regional district, Parksville, Courtney, Qualcomm Beach, et cetera. They're starting to deal with their infrastructure that's in the ground. That's what's here. That's what I was talking about earlier. Moving on the report. There's an excellent section in the report, starting on page 39, where the fire chief has provided 1, 2, 3, I can add 3.5 pages of information. And I noticed the fire chief is here. George, did you want to highlight any areas of your report tonight?
Because people want to be updated, if they have any questions, let's give me a call.
Okay, did everyone hear that? It's all there. And if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to give the chief a call. So thank you for that, Chief Lenz. So on the appendixes and the approved budgets, on page 48 and 49, lists out all the capital projects. It lists the $31 million that I just talked about. And you'll notice in there on page 49, on the right-hand side at the very bottom, it says from 2031 to 2035, bottom line, we're projected to spend $6,197,000. The next five-year period is $5,218,000. And then $8,996,000. And finally, $9,663,000. So that's where our problem is. And the reason there's so much built up in that short time period, unlike most municipalities, our water infrastructure was almost put in it all at the same time. So it's aging out at the same time. A municipality or city, they develop subdivisions. And a subdivision could come 10, 15, 20 years later, and then another one 10 years later. So the infrastructure aging is scattered by year. It's distributed much differently than it is here in Deep Bay. So we need to save some money to be able to pay this for our rainy day fund that will be coming. That concludes my report.
Thank you, John. The recommendation before us is that the board receive the 2025 Deep Bay Improvement District financial statements and the audit.
Number six.
Pardon me, number six, of course. that the board receive the 2025 annual general meeting report and that it be published on the website. Could I have someone move that motion, please? Thank you, Craig, and the seconder. Thank you, Crystal. Any discussion from the table? Then I'll call for the question. All those in favor, please raise your hands. That's carried and so ordered unanimously. And thank you very much for that report, John. Adam Norman, you are up. The annual water system report. This is our water operator, Adam Norman.
If I could, Mr. Chair, maybe I could do a quick review of the report that's written before you, and then Adam can speak on his part afterwards, because Adam and I worked all that out at the beginning, and we don't want to throw a curve at Adam right here.
Absolutely.
Okay, just to review page 53 of the report, it describes that we have eight wells, and it describes that currently 4, 5, 6, and 8 are used for production supply. Is that correct, Adam?
4, 5, 6, and 8, yep.
4, 5, 6, and 8?
Yep.
Wells 1, 2, and 3 are on standby for emergency use. Page 54. Observation well. You can see it graphically. Last year when we did this meeting, we had July 1st values in there. Staff changed that to April 30th for this year. And we changed that so that we could get 2026 on this document. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been able to show you anything in terms of where we were at right now. So these are comparisons all to April 30th. You can certainly see at the last 4 years, the level is higher, which means worse, because you go from the ground down to the level of the water. So a high bar is, it goes down further, has to go down further to get the water. So it's not a good thing. It means our aquifer is declining. I might have used the word reservoir there. I apologize for that. It's aquifer that I'm referring to. That being said, with where we're at in April 30th, 2026, if there's a positive, it's better than what it was in 2025. But we'll see how that plays itself out with snowpack differences. And this is something that's monitored by the province daily. There's a link on our website. You can go in and see this data right up to date. And the water operator reports on this, and it's talked about at the board level certain times, but we are concerned with this, and that is why starting tomorrow we'll be at stage 2 water restrictions to coincide with the rest of the areas within the RDN. You'll see some on the signage coming into the two sides of the community. Craig, have you adjusted that too? It's already been put up, so a day in advance. Okay, so do your part. Try and reduce your use of water if you can. Moving on, next page, I'll let Adam talk about the sampling process. Page 56, pumping statistics. This is, it's been a change here. Previously, we used to give to these meetings in imperial gallons on the pumping statistics and the consumption in cubic meters. So it was really hard to compare the two reports. Now they're both in cubic meters. So what you can do for the keeners out there is you could add 3 months of pumping statistics data. So that's water pumped from the wells that we measure, and then look and compare that with what we build out, which is on page 57. And the astute analysis will notice they're never equal, because we don't bill everything out. You have fire practices, hydrants, leaks. There's issues that come up. So there's always sort of lost water revenue from that. So there's always a difference. What I can see us doing for next year is probably having a graph that compares exactly what I just stated, so you don't have to kind of do it yourself. But we'll work on that one step at a time. So what this shows, though, having said all that, when you look at page 56, it's got a 5-year period, and it shows how much water is being pumped out of the wells and how it's changed. So 5 years ago, in each column, so the darker red, if you want to call it, that's 2021. The far right one of each five-year group would be 2025. So each of the 5 years is there, and you can kind of see each month how it varies from 1 year to the next. The most striking difference on the pumping statistics is in June. In June 2021, it must have been really very hot that particular month, and you can see what the water was pumped out of the wells. Okay, so that's what that graph does. The graph on page 57, that shows what we bill out per quarter. And you can do a comparison with the 5 years, and it shows the consumption amount. Okay, any questions on that? You can ask me later in the meeting or phone the office, come in, be happy to expand on that. Then on page 58, we mentioned that there's no major projects were undertaken in 2025 in terms of capital works. There's a section on emergency response plan. And on the emergency response plan, we need to do some work on that. It's out of date, and we're currently working on that. Then we have test results, and Adam will speak on test results. These are all the tests that occurred during the year. And on the last page of the test results, page 63, we put on at the bottom what VHA's guidelines, rules are with respect to E. coli and coliform and samples, how it works. And then we described some testing codes that you might not understand, a term like QRWRT. We get a test result that says QRWRT. What does that mean? Well, the explanation is in here. So these test results, I've summarized them all here for the year. These are available weekly on our website. If you go on our website under water information, there's a link right to this, and you can see them as they come up. Okay. Do you have any questions on this? Please ask after Adam speaks. We'll let Adam speak first. Okay.
You can turn it over to Adam now.
Yes. Yeah, we did pass that.
Yeah. So we'll go to Adam now.
Sure.
Please, yeah. Adam.
Hi, thanks, guys, for having me here tonight. I'm happy to be here. I would like to just sort of, I guess, highlight a couple of the things that I do or the processes that I follow, just so that it's clear. And if you have questions about these types of things, I'm more than happy to answer them. With regards to the sampling, we can see there was a couple of periods through this year where we had high total coliform counts in the water stream. What was noticed during these events and what we did about them was that we found that there was the most likely cause of what it was the increased velocity of opening up a hydrant or some kind of flushing without any safeguards of having chlorine in the water or any kind of treatment or any kind of filtration. Often what can happen in the inside of water pipes is that some kind of sediment gets built up in different parts of the community, usually in areas that have lower velocity going through the pipes on a regular basis. So what we find is that if a hydrant or a standpipe or something to that effect, or even a water main break or something to that, opens up and we increase velocity through a section of pipe that doesn't normally have velocity going through it, some of that sediment can get pulled off of the inside of the pipe, and then it comes out in the water column itself. And most likely can point to in early in the year, which first one here with the more recent one was in September, and then there was the other one that was in January, I believe.
That's correct.
So the solution to that is to, in a controlled manner, try to scour that sediment off the inside of the pipes in a controlled manner, and with the safeguard of having chlorine in the water at the time of us doing that. So we did our first round of that in December of 2025. We chlorinated the water, and we systematically, in a controlled manner, opened up all of the hydrants and flushed water, increased that velocity, scoured the pipes. We could see sediment coming through the water column as we were flushing. So we knew that we were achieving at least that, getting some of that sediment off the inside of the pipes, flushing them until we saw good clear water, shutting it down and moving down to the next one downstream from it. So that system proved to be effective. We did have a good stretch of period where there was no issues with bacteriological results in the water sampling. Up until recently, these last few weeks, when we did that first flushing in December, we projected that we would be trying to conduct another one in May of this year. We'd want to do two times a year and try to get it on shoulder seasons, so we're not trying to draw a whole bunch of water in the middle of drought season, and also not dumping a whole bunch of water on the ground in potentially freezing season. So the next time that we were projected to do that would be May anyhow. What we found in the last few weeks, there was a couple of very small total coliform counts, not in this report, but just to kind of give an update on where we're at with that. There was small counts of one colony per 100 milliliters, which is, according to the guidelines that VHA puts out, is well below the level where other measures would be required, like disinfecting or like a boil water notice, that kind of thing, where the line for that is 10 colonies per 100 milliliters. And so you can see that in the last times we were in around 28, 35, that's what caused those two boil water advisories that we had to put in place this last year. So we are getting these very small counts. There's a number of different things that could be contributing to that. What has already been done is the replacement of some of the sampling equipment. The procedure is always to disinfect that equipment before doing any sampling, so that we know that if we get a positive sample, we want to have the most confidence that it is actually from the water itself and not from any of the sampling equipment that we're using. Some of that sampling equipment was getting old, and so that has been replaced, and the sampling program is continued. But we will be putting on the books another disinfection and flushing program coming up in this next month here.
Just quickly on that, if I could. On the website today, we put a notice on that. If you go on the front page of our website, the flushing is coming up. As soon as we know the exact dates, we will put that on the website. We will also put out the sandwich board signs. The dates haven't been sent yet, so this is just really new news.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The only other thing I'd like to mention is just what my regular sampling schedule is, and that's it's not a schedule that I've set out. It's a schedule that's set out by VHA, that every week they want the sample port that's nearest to the reservoir to be sampled. So that gets done every single week. And then there's four distribution samples that are taken, out in the community, three of which are at the far ends of the community. We do operate on kind of a dead end system, where all the way out to the end of Maple Guard is a dead end, out to the end of Thompson Clark East is a dead end, and of course down to the bottom of the spit, Deep Bay Drive is a dead end. And so all three of those spots get sampled every other week. And the other one is taken right from the fire hall. So those four sample locations get sampled every other week. I have it timed out so that I take one from each side of the community
each week. So every week there's a sample being taken from the reservoir, sample being taken from the Jameson side, and one from the Gainsburg side. I think that's everything I'd like to add to what we're talking about tonight.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I can't pick
any. And at any given time, if there's questions for me as the operator or what's happening in the system, at any given time, if questions want to be directed to the administrative office, then I'm happy to respond and give out any information that people are looking for, really.
And if I could add on that, Adam responds quickly too. It's excellent, your response back to people. And we get that feedback in the office. So you do a real good job of getting back to people.
Trustees, have any questions for Adam this time? No. Then seeing no hands, we will.
Comment. Well, there'll be questions at the end of the meeting,
that,
I think.
Yeah, do that.
Well, he could ask now, but it's at the end of the meeting.
Yes, go ahead.
If it's appropriate. Is there any suggestion that maybe there should be a residual chlorine in the pipe system because of the buildup?
To be left in permanently or on an ongoing continuous basis?
Can you repeat the question too, so people can hear it?
Oh, the question is wondering if there's evidence to suggest or if there's suggestion to a need to have an ongoing chlorine residual in the water column on a continual basis. That's certainly the norm for communities of this size. And with all the considered factors, we do have incredible water. The water that comes out of those wells and those aquifers is beautiful. It's clear. It requires no filtration. The only thing is that it comes out of the ground and it goes through a series of many kilometers of 50-year-old pipe. And a reservoir, obviously. So there's always opportunities where contamination could happen because of that aging infrastructure. So yes, there would be reason for that. And that's something that the health authority has been suggesting. We'll see if that suggestion turns into a recommendation, if that recommendation turns into a mandate of any kind. But at this point, that's not where we're at this point.
But the other side of the coin, if it was residual chlorine, would there be the need for the same level of testing?
Oh, the same frequency, you mean?
Repeat the question again, please.
If there was chlorine in the water, would there still be the same need for sampling? That would have to be a question, I think, answered by the health office. Yeah, I would certainly defer that. I can't really speculate on what that would be. Every system's a little bit different. I mean, but the company that I work for, Core Water Management, we operate in sites. All have different water sources, different water quality, and different parameters that come from VHOC. So it would be on a individual basis, and I would leave that for them to make that decision for sure.
Thank you,
Manfred.
Adam, could you elaborate a little bit on the role of the reservoir? What role does the reservoir play?
Sorry, say that again?
What role does the reservoir play in the water system?
What role does it play in the water system generally?
The reservoir.
Yeah. Its role is to act as a continual pressure buffer and as a backup water supply at any given time. So
what is the time average that the water in the reservoir is being replenished?
I can't give you an exact answer on that. That's a calculation that would have to be done. It's probably something I could figure out. I could do the math on that, but I don't have that number for you right now.
But yeah. Adam, if you could though, one of the things that Core Water did when you started with DBID is you changed how the reservoir was turning the water. Or maybe you could explain that. So in that, then they'll
yeah, that'll at least give you some context. It's not exactly the math that you're requesting, but the yeah, when we came into the operations of DBID's water system, the reservoir was operating on a basis that it was filling up to 96%, which is its full mark. 97%, it starts to go over its overflow. So it was filling up to 96%, and it was only being allowed to drop down to 93%, which was causing stagnation in that water. There was no evidence that water, since it's a single line system where the water comes out of the ground and it goes simultaneously to the community and up to the reservoir, and then when the well pump shut off, the water is coming down from the reservoir, but it was only being allowed to come down 3%. And so the water would go up to the reservoir, and then it would basically just stay there and only move back and forth by 3%, which isn't the full, it's not the full volume of even the water main that goes from the highway up to the reservoir. And so one of the things that we changed was operating that in such a way that it would drop down to 76% and then fill back up to 90%, which meant that we are getting water turnover in the reservoir. So that kind of answers your question that yes, we are getting water turnover. Exactly how long it takes for that to fully turn over, I can't really answer that question immediately, but yeah.
I can just add a little bit. I think you run it between what, 96 and 70?
96 and 76, I believe it's 76.
So calculations were done in the past that if the reservoir dropped 12%, some of that water was now coming into the community. So it's been dropped about 20%. So each day some of that water is coming into the community, and then the pumps kick on and fill it back up. So it is being refreshed every day, and it's been that way for what, 15 months now?
Yeah, I'd have to look at my notes to see when we made that change.
So the water's not being left up there to stagnate.
Yeah,
it's getting turned over, and I would ballpark maybe a third of the reservoir a day would be kind of just a really rough measure.
And keep in mind as well what Adam said earlier about his testing routine for the water testing, that the reservoir is tested weekly. When I was here in 2023, it was not being tested. So we've gone from not being tested, which was the normal practice up on the reservoir, to being tested and monitored weekly and mm-hmm. turned over. So from my perspective, that's a safer option for the community.
Yeah.
One more, I'm sorry.
Pumping statistics. Have you had restrictions started this early before, like in May? Has that been kind of reflected on here?
Not that I'm aware of. Perhaps we even overstepped our authority on this one, in that we didn't ask the board. We just went ahead and did it because we knew the board would say yes, because they've done it in the past. So that's part of the reason it was done so early. We didn't want to wait for a meeting on something we felt was a no-brainer. So hopefully I won't. Well, I'm sure the board is good with that. But we haven't done that before. But I really think it's just generally people are more aware now. You hear it and you read about it all the time. Like, it's just, yeah. Public's good.
Yeah, bigger, like Parksville, City of Vancouver, they've already had two, because the snowpack isn't there to keep filling the reservoir through the summer. Mm-hmm. The hills will be the snow. So it's all kind of a guess of what's going to happen with the weather through the summer. But better to err on the side of caution.
No more questions? Then I would, the recommendation before us, fellow trustees, is that the board accept the 2025 annual water system report for information and direct staff to forward the report to VHA and to publish on the website. Could I have someone move that motion? Thank you, Craig. Seconder, Trustee Kuhn, thank you. Further discussion? Seeing no hands, we'll call for the question. All those in favor of the motion? Carried and so ordered unanimously. Thank you very much. Moving over the page. Trustee honorarium for 2026, budgeted amount for 2006 is as follows. Chair receives $1,800, trustees receive $1,200 for a total of $9,000. The recommendation to approve honorariums, a ratepayer is required to make a motion specifying the amounts, and then another ratepayer would be required to second the motion. If this occurs, then approval of the gallery would be required for the motion to be approved. Administrator John, please, would you speak on that?
Yeah, just a few comments that I have on this. We went through this on when we were going through the budget, and quite frankly, the board at first just went right by it and left it at 6,200 like it was last year. And I asked the board, I said, well, at what point are we going to address this honorarium? It hasn't basically changed for a long time. It was 4,800 in total in 2007. And you just add 2% to that and you get to the 9,000. So it's just something that hasn't been addressed. And in 27, it was a big jump from 2026. So back in that year, they probably had a discussion like we're having right now. Like, you know, we've been behind on this for a long time. Let's address it. That's how it came up. Then there was a discussion on some other water districts and what they pay. And from that, the discussion was, it seemed appropriate based on just the meeting times once a month, $100 a meeting, a little bit more for the chair. And that was the level of how it was established. The trustees, I would point out, and I'm not trying to justify this amount when I say this, because really, if we want to justify the amount, it should be far greater. They put way more time than this in. I'm only talking about the meetings. This is essentially a volunteer job with a token amount as an honorarium. What that amount should be, it's just based on budget. It's not rocket science. If you do the math, it's a big increase from last year. If you look at what they do and what they're getting paid for what they're doing, it's not much pay. So really, that's where we're at on it. Thank you.
Thank you, John. So I would suggest that the recommendation is open to the floor to discuss if there's anyone that agrees. And I want this board to know that not the floor to know that not anyone at this table has sort of said, yeah, we're worth more. We've been encouraged and thanked and justified. He's an accountant by what we get, what you would get if you were a trustee. So as I say, we're not asking for this. It's a lovely gesture. It's up to you as the residents to decide whether you believe that there's an increase required. So a recommendation, somebody has from you has to make a motion, has to be seconded, and then you guys vote. So I throw it out to anybody that might consider making the motion. And if you don't, that's fine. We just move on to the next item of business.
Can I ask you a question now, or is this about this?
Yep.
Is this a
yep.
tax deductible thing? I know the firemen have their honorariums are tax deductible. So
no.
Not?
No.
Why is there a difference between what the firemen do and what you guys get? Both volunteer kind of.
Sorry, Catherine. What the fire department gets is federally, it's on their income tax. It's done through the federal government. Federal government doesn't do that for volunteers for improvement districts.
But aren't the firemen's volunteers too?
Yeah, but that's done through their income tax. It's an income tax situation.
So having it as an honorarium is a common practice for trustees?
Yes.
Yeah, I just don't know, so I just wondered.
I'd actually like to add something to that. So it's by legislation, but at one time, I'd say about 10 years ago, it was changed. One third, like a say a council member, one third of their stipend was not subject to tax. And it was changed. And then it was all became taxable. So if you pay someone $1,000 to be a trustee, for example, that's $1,000 worth of income and they're paying tax on the full amount. 10 years ago, one third of the amount was tax exempt. So it'd be $666 would be taxable, not the full amount. They changed that. So what happened in a lot of local governments at that time, 10 years ago, is they increased their stipends by one third to deal with this tax issue. I can assure you Deep Bay didn't do that because the rates have hardly changed, but there was a change with that. And then with the firefighters, there's legislation that gives them a tax deduction. And I think just recently there was a change to that a couple of years ago where the government improved the tax exemption status for the volunteers, that they got more of a break for the good work that they do when they're volunteering.
Are these rates that you put here, are these comparable to our other, like Bowser?
You want to speak to that?
Bullhorn, fire department board, and it's just the fire department. They pay $100 a meeting, 12 meetings a year. And they voted that themselves. But here, at least for a little more upfront and open about it, asking the public to consider it, and then they vote on it.
Can I say, having been a trustee in another jurisdiction, I know what it takes to do the job. I think that $100 a meeting looks silly, but it's not, because of the work you do behind the scenes. I know you've done cross-referencing to other jurisdictions. We have one here next door. I believe the numbers that are presented will be correct.
Yeah.
Mr. McLean.
The chair received an $1,800 honorarium and trustee $1,200 honorariums.
You'd like to move that motion? Do we have a seconder in the crowd? We have a couple of seconders. Thank you very much. Is there any further discussion from the table or from the floor? Manfred?
Winter.
Winter. Winter. He's got a summer smile, but Winter. Thank you, Stuart. Thank you, Manfred. There's no further discussion, I'm sure, or if there is, by all means. And if not, we will call for the question. All those in the crowd that are in favor of this motion that you're going to raise the honorariums for the trustees, the chair will move to $1,800 from 14, and the trustees will move to $1,200 from 8. Please raise your hands if you're in favor of that motion. Boy, oh boy, that looks almost unanimous. Thank you very much. That would be carried. Thank you all. Seriously. Now, do I have to finish that with a motion? They've done that for the table. The item number 9 is the written presentation from the Deep Bay Fire Rescue Society. It's in your package, and you may not have read it, but it is there to be read.
You want me to read it out?
Yes, I would ask the administrator read that out to the gallery, please.
This is the Deep Bay Fire Rescue Society 2025 President's Report. Hello, everyone. My name is Barb Nixon, President of the DBFRS, along with Secretary Treasurer John Smith and Directors Robert Hale, Manfred Winter, Ron Mielke, Val Pardiak, Dave Harvey, and Linda McKay. We have participated in bottle drive, shirt and hat sales, reflective street sign sales, garbage sale, garage sale, and also Parksville Beach Festival, for which we've applied to be a gate ambassadors once again. If accepted, we will need 7 volunteers per shift, so the community's help will be needed and much appreciated. Our next bottle drive is Saturday, September 12th, 2026. We are planning our fourth annual garage sale to be held tentatively July 18th, 2026. Keep your eyes on the mailbox signs or Facebook for more information. Many thanks to everyone who helps to make our bottle drive such a success. Our total donations to the Deep Bay Volunteer Fire Department thus far are $264,670. I will go off script here and read that part again. Our total donations to the Deep Bay Volunteer Fire Department thus far are $264,670. Wow. None of the... None of this would be possible without the support from our volunteer fire department members, the society, our community, Lighthouse Feed and Garden, Ship and Shore, TELUS, and others. We now have our charitable status and can issue tax receipts for donations over $10 upon request. Society memberships are $10 per year. Barb Nixon, President, DBFRS. Thank you, Barb, and the society.
Thank you. Thank you, John. The recommendation before us is that the board receive the April 27th, 2026 written presentation from the Deep Bay Fire Rescue Society. Could I have someone please move that motion? Crystal, thank you. And a seconder? Lisa, thank you very much. Trustee Lee Charcot, I would call for the question. I don't see any further discussion. All those in favor of that motion, please indicate. That's carried and passed unanimously. Thank you very much. Other business is what, question and answer?
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go to question and answer period. And little change in the format this year. Question period will proceed as follows. You residents, anyone, you'll be able to ask questions, but you can also make some comments. We'd like to hear what you think about, if you have some things to say. So it's not just, you're not just regulated to ask a question. You can ask a question and you can ask a comment. I would ask that they be brief and to the point with both questions and comments. Stay on track, remain polite and respectful. All these questions will be recorded, and if not easily answered in an appropriate time or require additional research, will be answered and posted on the website at a later date. Thanks. Up to the floor if you'd like to. Stuart, please.
Thank you, Chair. I have two questions, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
First question is to Adam. In your opinion, would the reservoir operate better in a water and fire protection capacity to have two lines, one going in and one coming out?
Mm. Yes.
I guess my next question is to the chair and the trustees. I see that the budget has the reservoir replaced in 2039, and the line from Gainsborough at Mountain View to the reservoir in 2031. So is there any plan to twin that line while you're digging up and replacing the line to pre-plan for a future reservoir that would have automatic turnover and the ability to maintain 100% capacity for fire protection?
Trust our Administrator John?
Yes, it's interesting that you asked that question, because when I was getting prepping for this meeting, I thought to myself, that doesn't really make sense, the timing that we have on this, on that water line, because absolutely it should all be matched up if possible. Those water lines that are on those reports, there's not a lot of science to do with the timing. We just know that we need to do them all in that certain period of time. We kind of looked at what the engineers had said were the priority lines and move those first, but there's more to it than just like the priority. It delivers a lot of water. There's also timing associated. There's potential danger with, say, a slope or whatever, and some of these other considerations weren't taken into consideration when we did that timing. So certainly most of this that you're referring to is in the next 15 to 25 years. That absolutely has to be relooked at. And at all possible, we should be doing it at the same time.
I would make a comment about that.
Please, Crystal.
Yeah, so obviously, if you have two lines, the water runs in, the water runs out, you don't have a problem with stagnation or levels and all that. That's really what it should have been done a long time ago. When they built the reservoir, it was strictly for pressure in the system. So it would be nice that they had done a two-pipe system. Then when they build the new reservoir, of course, the old one has to remain in place until the new one's done, and so does the pipe. So they don't put two new pipes in and just leave the old one. And again, they have to build a new reservoir before they disturbed any of the ground, just so all the trucks and things going over it. So yes, that'd be a better system totally.
Please.
It just goes back to what I've been saying for years, is that the budget is a moving document. And so, yes, we would always look at what was going on, and does that really make sense that this is, you know, put in this pigeonhole for right now, and this is put in this pigeonhole for right now. Like digging up a road. If you're digging up a road, you want to make sure that the water and the sewer, if you're in different municipalities, are all going to be done at the same time. So, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well,
Trustee Kirstens.
So McElhaney Engineering has already been approached months ago about expanding our footprint up where the reservoir currently is for the future reservoir, and widening the road allowance to accommodate these sewage pipes.
Mr. Rep.
See in your initial comments that you're working towards a strategic plan. Looking at a lot of the documents you've already prepared, I think you're well underway at being able to do it apart from verbiage. Can you agree?
So I'm not sure what your question is. You say we're on our way. So we're on our way that we're planning to do a bunch of things. Is that what you mean? And we haven't put it in a plan.
But it's a comment for a strategic plan.
Yes.
A stated objective.
Yes.
You've already got a budget, fairly extensive budget, for pipe replacement and equipment replacement.
Yes.
Now, there needs to be some discussion related to that. So what I'm suggesting is you're well underway.
Yes, we are. It just formalizes it maybe a little more precisely.
Yeah.
For example, we mentioned earlier in the meeting that we need to look at the emergency plan. So it's one thing to revise the document, but there's also the option of like a mock disaster and doing work towards that. On the asset and our capital expenditure plans, we really need to get going on our asset management plan.
Yeah.
Okay, so that tie, and we've done a lot of the legwork in terms of identifying the project, but it needs to be more formalized, because to be able to get government grants, you have to have an asset management plan. And we recently applied for one, like that Stuart McLean brought forward to the board. One of the first questions on the grant application that came in was, do you have an asset management plan? We don't, but we are working on it. So that actually counts. If we weren't even working on one, it may have been more difficult to get that grant. So it's just going to pinpoint exactly the items that we need to look at. And the chair has asked for other board members input. The things that we should be looking at, but we do have to remember we do fire and water. Like sometimes people will come in to the community and they want a trail or something like that. That's not what we do. We look after water and we look after fire.
Thank you. Please.
I got a question for that.
Please.
Is there, you're saying that the water in the reservoir historically has been just sort of sitting there and stagnating? Water comes in, water goes up, but only a certain level. Is there any thought that's been put in towards agitating that water that's in there? Does it become a turbidity issue where you'd end up with that sediment? The tank is now being cleaned on a regular basis, mm-hmm. and in the past it wasn't, right?
Yeah.
So is there any benefit to agitate that water while it's in that reservoir to mm-hmm. stop that stagnation that's happening up there? Like in some industrial aspects, they'll have a basic motor with a propeller on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to cycle the water, mix it up, right?
I'm familiar with what you're asking.
I would suggest that I'm not qualified to speak to the specifics of whether that would be beneficial or not in this certain circumstance. That would require an engineer to make that kind of decision. What I would say at this point is that the water is currently being turned over. It's not being agitated because it's still not coming in at a very high velocity. And it's up against a lot of pressure head as it makes its way up to there. So there's enough velocity for the, and the other thing to add is that the only intake pipe is at the base of the, yeah. is at the base of the tank, of course. So the water is coming in when we were only operating at a very small amount, it was only coming in and there would be maybe perhaps some mixing that was happening, but, or at least some, a short period of you know velocity coming up through that pipe that could maybe make some kind of circulation happen in that water itself, but without that water actually being able to exit the reservoir and the water main that runs all the way down to the system, that's what made the water sort of stagnate there, yeah.
Trouble is there's no power up there.
Right.
Even the SCADA system is run by a solar system. The future reservoir, there is planned to put power up there. And I can't remember what it was called, a hydroflex or something. It was a water inlet where it was a stand pipe inside the reservoir and the water came in at different layers to provide a better turnover.
Yeah.
And that was on a two-line reservoir.
Yeah, if you have a two-line reservoir, then you would typically have the water coming and dropping in from the top and then exiting from the bottom so you don't have that short-circuiting happening.
Let me just add to that quickly. One of the old engineers' reports did say that if you drop the reservoir level enough, there should be enough turbulence with the new water coming in to mix it enough.
Yeah.
It just hadn't been done in the past for whatever reason. So.
Another thing of note, maybe for how we changed the way that the when we changed the parameters of how the reservoir would fill, it was also only being ran by two well pumps at any given time. It would bring in the third and fourth well pump if on like an override sort of basis. So if the community was using more water than our two most high performing wells could replace, then well five and well four would come on as well. So all we ever had was two wells pushing up to the reservoir. Whereas now we have a longer period of water going up and being able to circulate. We also have all four wells running and pushing that water up for that time period where it's filling up. So we have a higher flow rate, which would give us a higher velocity and a lower level, which gives us a better ability to circulate the water inside the reservoir.
Manfred?
Do we know anything about the temperature differential between the incoming water and the water in the reservoir?
We do not have any data on that, no.
Please.
The water operator, just looking at your chart about the observation well distance measurements over the last 10 years,
mm-hmm.
it looks like we've lost about 2 meters of height. Sitting around 6 or 7 now. I'm just wondering, does our system, how deep can it get it down? That is, about changing the system as it gets, is our capacity only for reach 12 meters, or can you reach 50 meters down? Or, and then the second question, do we know how deep the aquifer or the reservoir under the ground is?
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to continue to drop at this rate, would we just drill a deeper hole and there's tons of water we're going to believe about this? Or is this a long-term problem?
I certainly appreciate the question. It's a good question. I don't have the answer for you on that. On hand right away.
I could speak to that.
I was going to ask you, Crystal. Crystal comes in and looks at all these old engineering reports all the time. So if anyone's going to know that answer, if there is an answer, I figured it might be you.
Yes, my concern has been with the aquifer. And it just so happens that we belong to the Beaufort Watershed Stewards Group. So we've been testing the creeks. They had just quite an extensive report done on the aquifer in Fanny Bay. And we contacted one of the fellows, and they've given us, the Guardian have given us a grant. So we've got probes down some of the other wells in the area. We can tell what's going on with our wells because we have that information. But it's just the general aquifer area. So we just have been doing that. We haven't had any statistics yet. On another note, VIU is doing a research project on the Bowser Swamp and trying to correlate the water there with the connection with the 310, which is our observation well, which is on the old Gainsburg Extension Road. Now, the thing is that Bowser also uses our water. That's the same aquifer. And they don't have a lot of information. So my feeling is we need to get them on board, and any research we do needs to involve them too. So we are looking at that. Because the aquifer has dropped actually about 4 feet over the last 10 years, right, that you asked.
And so does the whole thing run dry if it drops another foot or 10 feet? Or no, we know?
Well, not sure, because it varies. The strata varies, right? Because you're deeper here and shallower there. And they look at the drilled wells and what the ground level are. That's how they determine where the aquifer is and how deep it is. But of course, it's not just a pond. You know, it varies all over the place. So some of the boats do actually show a gradient, but it's also through a very small area. So it really is hard to tell. Yeah.
First time speaker then. Yeah, you first, then Manfred.
I just want to, oh, sorry.
Go ahead, go ahead.
Just to want to let John what Crystal said. I'm a volunteer with Beaufort Watershed Stewards, what he said. And we are currently establishing a program. We have three wells in the Bowser area, tapping into the local deep aquifer, and trying to get a more spatial picture of changing in the groundwater level. And I just would like to use this occasion to put the word out. We are looking for a fourth well. So if somebody has a deep water well on the property, tapping into the deep aquifer 416, please let me know, or let Christo know.
Manfred, we could, I'm sure through the board, we could get that information out to the district, either in the pipeline or something. Would you guys not think we could help out by trying to get the message out? I'm sure there must be some wells in our district that could help facilitate your project.
Thank you.
Please.
We're on water restrictions now as of tomorrow, effectively.
Yes.
And as we all have been saddled with making sure we conserve water and do our due diligence and stuff like that, there's commercial properties in our area that are drawing from the same aquifer that we are, with their own private wells, whether they're registered or not. Do you have any information about how many commercial property wells are within our community that are drawing from our same aquifer that we are? And they're under no restriction. You've got aquaculture, you've got nurseries. I mean, somebody could set a bottling plant up here tomorrow, and it wouldn't be really a whole lot we could fight about, right?
Right.
Yes, that's a very good question. They wouldn't get a bottling plant because we need a license for that.
Right.
But yes, and some of those properties you mentioned have just dug wells. So when you drill a well, it has to be logged with the government, and you can go online. All the well statistics are there. The well, the log from the welling, the well drilling is all available.
Yeah.
But when you have a dug well, there's no information.
Right.
So, and I'm not sure how we get to make those people.
Well, they're going to be forced. Yes. They're going to be resistant about giving any information out.
Yes,
but
it's a good question.
It is.
Looking at it.
First time, Manfred. Manfred, just I'm going to let the first time question, please.
Sorry. Yes, I'm of the opinion, instead of spending all that money to put pipes up to the reservoir and electric power, the reservoir should be in the community, and it should be spent all on the reservoir. Typical reservoir other ratepayers agree with me that it should be in the community, not up the hill.
Well, you need the elevation to get the head pressure. If it's just a tank sitting beside the fire hall, it's not doing anything. You'd have to have a water tower.
They put them on legs.
Yeah. Well, I could imagine in an earthquake zone how costly that would be to put a water tower up with 545 cubic meters of water. That is a serious undertaking.
They are all over the place.
Well, a lot of water towers around in this country have disappeared over time.
Security is a big problem up there, long ways away. Anyway, that's my thought.
Just on that, though, nonetheless, we can still talk to our engineers about it. If there's an option that's out there, we should be investigating all options. I tend to agree that there's some aspects of that that would be worrisome to bring it by the fire hall, but we can still look at the option. They probably have looked at the option and discarded it, would be my guess, but I don't know. I know when you drive through Saskatchewan, for example, you see them, but I don't see many in BC.
And you're going to get half PSI a foot. It's precious, so you've got to have a lot of pipe.
That's
why George's requirements to blast the water out of the pipes to fight the fires.
Yeah.
The other option that is also common with reservoirs that are right there at level would be pressurized pumping systems,
which gets very
costly for sure. Yeah.
That's what the Bowser water system is. There are reservoirs in the ground along Crosley Road. They have a pumped municipal water system, and their hydrants are useless when it comes to a fire. Absolutely useless. All the water has to be hauled by anchors.
Ship's Point have a similar situation where they're pulling it out of the ground, and they've got 50 horsepower pumps to feed the community. They've got a big diesel engine to back up in case the power goes out.
Yeah.
So it compounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know the security aspect.
Yeah. So I noticed that the budget for the fire department is the same as it was last year for a lot of things. Given the fact that all of us drive cars and we go to the gas station to find out what the cost of diesel is there not a concern that, like, where's the buffer? We spent $2,500 on diesel last year. We're only budgeting $3,000. I can tell you, when I go to the gas to fill my car, it's a lot more than it was last year. We're going to run out of money for diesel.
I think as Diane said earlier, it's a bit of a moving document in terms of looking at things. See, if one area is short, there's usually some money in another area. And if there isn't, then we go to the board and it gets rectified. Your comment is correct. Typically what's been happening is the fire department has been under budget for typically what happens, like on an overall basis. So there hasn't been a funding issue. That's one of the reasons there's just over 500,000 in the fire department operating surplus is over the years. It tends to be a little bit underspent each year, and then it adds to the reserve. So if something really unforeseen came and we didn't have money in the budget, we would go to the board and say, you know, we recommend that we need to look at drawing into that reserve, and then the board would make a decision. And if the expenditure request was reasonable, I'm sure that the board would approve it. And I'm sure you would only ask if it was reasonable. So there's a process in play that would deal with that.
Please.
When the budget document was created, it was also created in October, November of 2025 for the 2026 year. At that time, did we know that Mr. Trump was going to start bombing Iran? No. Did we know that the price of diesel was going to go up to 50? No. So it's going to be all relative. If something is required for the fire department to operate, it's going to happen.
Yeah, there could be a significant difference this year, given the price of diesel.
Mm-hmm.
To your point, there was no war, and we spent $2,500 on a budget of $3,000. I can see us blowing that out of the water very easily this year, based on your own comment about the price of diesel.
Will not be going.
Push the truck, right?
Truck up.
Just back to the reservoir. There was a bunch of repairs that were going to be done on it. I'm just wondering what the status is on those up there.
Yeah, they were done. The expansion ledge was filled in with cement. A small crack that had adhesive in it was resealed on the roof, and the hatches were sealed, especially with the SCADA conduits went through the metal lip that was sealed.
So then the further question is, and maybe Adam, maybe this is your problem. Do you think what has been done is going to rectify any of the issues of the reservoir?
It was just to, yes, it just rectified that we thought water was getting into the reservoir. So,
yeah.
So that's all being sealed as much as we can do. And obviously we haven't had any problems since.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah. And just on that note, we test it weekly. That's where the proof is. And if we had a positive read, we would deal with that. What's interesting with some of the recent, so it's not on this report, but some of the recent reads where we had a very minor, like a count of one, but it still concerns us, any count that's above the less than one criteria. What's interesting is on some of them that the reservoir has read less than one, and then you get, say, Maple Guard at a one or whatever, which tells you that the source of the problem isn't at the reservoir. There's something like in the pipe or something else that's causing it.
Or simply the sampling equipment.
Or the sampling equipment, yeah. Right. It's common.
Further questions? Manfred?
I just quickly wanted to come back to an earlier topic about aquifers. The keyword duck well came up in that discussion, and I just wanted to point out that we... large part of Bowser, part of Deep Bay, are actually sitting on two aquifers. There is the deep aquifer 416, and there is the shallower aquifer 665. And most, or if not all, duck wells in this area are mostly tapping into the higher, shallower aquifer 665. And what we are looking at with the provincial observation well is the deeper aquifer 416. So we are sometimes talking about two different things here.
Okay.
Yeah, didn't know that.
No. Right. That's good information that you perhaps you could.
It's all public information, just
yeah, on
aquifers in BC and work your way through.
Okay.
It's very interesting information out there.
Just if I could.
Yeah.
Manfred, maybe I could talk to you about this another day. That might be a kind of information or an interesting thing to put in our pipeline to inform the public, because we talk about the observation well 310 and it, you know, it's always the kind of the same thing. And then some new information, how it works, that'd be, I think, a good pipeline information part.
Any more questions?
We're done.
If there's no more further questions, we will call for adjournment.
Can I just get one more comment?
Yes, you may.
I just would like to thank the board for all the work they do and the staff too. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Brian. Motion to adjourn. Do we have make a motion? Diane, don't need to second it. All those in favor of adjournment, please raise your hands. It's carried and so ordered. Thank you, everyone, for showing up.